This is the art of discussing, where everyone is committed to having discussions with people sharing different points of view while respecting the person expressing them. We're your hosts. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kate. And we're excited that you've joined us. Let's get to this week's episode. Welcome back to Art of Discussing. We're your hosts. I'm Kate.
And I'm Ben.
And this topic is BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. And this is something I had never heard of before we brought it as a topic. And as after researching, I have some thoughts. I think Ben does too. So it'll be interesting conversation. But for those who have never heard of BRICS, it is, would you, Ben, call it similar, almost a similar structure to like a NATO or that kind of, or is there another like G7?
I would say it's more closely affiliated to like a G organization, G6, G20, then a NATO. NATO was specifically formed for a security organization, right? After World War II.
Gotcha.
BRICS was more formed like those other organizations, more ostensibly, you know, their stated goal is for economic reasons, correct? Yeah. And cooperation, trade. Yeah,
that makes sense. So like a partnership, economic partnership.
Right.
But it's literally its goal or its aim is to largely weaken the U.S. economy influence in the dollar. Based on what I had seen, I'm actually looking at a article that mentions that. So the question is, like, how did we get here? So BRICS is actually an acronym that was put forward by Jim O'Neill in 2001. He's a Goldman Sachs economic expert. And he really wrote, was a contributor to this large document paper from Goldman Sachs Economic Research, and it's from 2003, talking about BRICS and the future, meaning like, what does it look like in 2050? So like the long standing, what's gonna happen over those 40, 50 years. And so we'll have that paper in the show notes. It's too long to really go through, but they really had it outlined where BRICS was going to rival the US and European, like the, you know, G6, G7, whichever one you want to say, like they were going to really try and rival the economy side, and potentially even have its own currency from what I saw. So there was a lot inside of that. In 2022, at the end of 2022, we see another Goldman Sachs economic research division paper that actually says it's going slower than we thought it was going to for them to ramp up. So we're now looking at like 2075. And so I want to highlight those. We can kind of talk a little bit about what's in them, but those are two things to look at inside of our show notes. It'll give you a lot more information. But I guess the first question is, what does BRICS stand for? So what countries were initially in BRICS? And it was it started with Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And then South Africa came in as well, where that's the S. And so let me just say that again, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. So you have two or three very powerful economies, actually maybe all of them, to be honest, but very powerful economies in the developing or emerging markets. And so in 2024, they were invited or added Saudi Arabia, Iran, Ethiopia, Egypt, Argentina, and the United Arab Emirates. Argentina's president declined the invitation. Saudi Arabia, from what I saw, wasn't necessarily technically confirmed its invitation, but some people are saying they did join. And so I guess, Ben, jump in, but my outlook is some of these countries are A, very powerful, B, currently in some connected or directly involved in some world conflict right now, potentially, and or in the area of a world conflict, and C, like, not always a friend to the West completely. So it makes me nervous when I started reading this and looking into it inside of you, because yes, it's there for economic dominance. Like, it really wants to partner together for economy, but economy has a lot of power when it comes to the world stage and the global world market. And so to me, that there's a more structured bridge there than I think some people are giving it credit to, between the economy and power. And so I think that that's what concerns me, especially in the last few years where Russia invaded Ukraine and we've got Iran potentially, or legitimately, I don't know, I'm not an expert, backing proxies like the Houthis, I believe it is, bombing, you know, or provide drone strikes to U.S. military, et cetera. So it's very potentially even involved in the Hamas-Israel conflict. So it's very concerning to me. So it went in a different direction potentially than I thought this episode was going. So I thought it was going to be a little bit more economic. But as I'm reading it, I'm like, oh my God, this is more than just economic.
So let's zoom out just for a moment. Yes.
I know, I threw a bunch of stuff. So help us out.
Let's look at two different viewpoints. One is instruments of national power. So for our readers who may not, our listeners who may not know, there's usually a conventional acronym to describe instruments of national power. And that acronym is generally referred to as DIME. I may have used that in some of our previous episodes. And DIME, D-I-M-E, like the coin, like no pun intended, is... D stands for diplomatic, right? Like instruments of national power. We can talk it out. You get your side, secretaries of state, foreign ministers, perhaps, and we can talk, maybe come to a negotiations agreement, so on and so forth. Information or intelligence, right? That's another instrument of national power. I know something perhaps you do not know. We can barter, so on and so forth. The last two are more conventionally understood and talked about, the last two being M, military strength, and E, economic, also referred to as soft power, which in a peacetime is the more generally accepted kind of use for exercising influence on a global international stage. So that's one thing.
We saw that with the sanctions. I think we talked about this with the
right. And we talk about sanctions, Russia. Right? So that's an excellent segue. So when we talk about sanctions, we look at countries who have the ability to levy sanctions and have them have effect. Let's look at a small country like Oh, I'm looking at you, Ecuador. Just 'cause, right? Picking Ecuador. Ecuador, let's say, wants to put sanctions on Russia, right? As you can see, there's a little bit of disparity between those two nations, right? Ecuador is not really known as a military power or an economic power, right? So if Ecuador says, hey, Russia, we're gonna place an embargo on your trade into our country, there's gonna be a little bit of, probably don't care about that from Russia, right? You know, because they don't have the influence needed, the soft power in order to affect Russia so much. But if it was a larger country, perhaps either a large economy, like say Japan or China or the United States, and they said that same thing to a large country like Russia, it would have greater impact. It would, that decision would cause greater financial burden to Russia, right? Or if an organization, a grouping like back in the 90s, like say NAFTA, place that, you know, the combined economic power of Canada, Mexico, and the United States, or ASEAN, the Asian, Southeast Asian countries, Asian and Southeast Asian countries, did that to Russia, place that, or as my our listeners may be more well known to, the European Union, right, in Europe, generally understood to be the West, right, did that, Russia may feel those. So those individual countries can band together and still have greater economic effect as a European Union. So BRICS is trying to create that effect, same effect as the European Union, by banding together. So what they are doing is actually two things that are unprecedented. One, they're all emerging markets, right? Pretty rising economies, growing at least at the time of formation, let's say. So you had Brazil, which is located in South America. You had South Africa now, which is located in the continent of Africa. You have Russia, which is on the, you know, both in Europe and Asia. And you have India and China, which are on Asia. So you have a greater global presence spread out. And that's no doubt something that they point to as more multipolar, which is to say that they likely speak with more of a global voice. Clearly, as you pointed out, Kate, there's a bit more currently, as you look at their governments, China's, India's current prime minister, president, and Russia, they have a more authoritarian slant, right, in their government makeup. And that for the United States is a bit concerning. How does that work together? If they're able to cooperate with any sort of effectiveness, it could be the effect on either the European Union or the United States' worldwide influence economically could be significant. And that's not to, you know, that's something to look at in the near future. I know
It's
that,
important to be aware that
right,
it's happening.
that's something that estimates are saying is further out there. But consider China is the world's most populous country, state currently. And India is the world's second most populous country. Russia, is the world's largest by geography country, and China is the world's third largest by geography country, fourth, I believe, behind the United States, actually. So it goes Russia, Canada, United States, China. And then I know that Brazil and India are at least top 10. So when you, I say all that to say this, look at the percentage of global population that would be in this group. I'm sure it would be 40 something percent, I would argue, for world population that would be in this group. And if you looked at the sheer land mass, I would probably argue it would be somewhere in the ballpark of 30%. So
Well,
that
I think what's interesting that you're pointing to is the geography of it, right? So the newest countries that they're bringing in are within trying to be within, one of them is in South America, which didn't fly, but the other ones are all in the Middle East in like oil type countries. And so it's almost like they're bringing in the economy, like the actual strength of the money with that play, where they already have a decent amount of geography and people, and now they're bringing in maybe the money. And something I didn't realize that you knew and made me Google was what was the top currency, like highest value currency, and that's the Kuwaiti
Weighty dinar.
dinar. And that's smack dab in the middle of the oil countries, Middle East. So, I think it's interesting. I'd like to see their strategy. I don't know that they've actually invited others, because they've been out. I think I read the first meeting they had was 2009. And then they've probably met a few times since, but this is the first time that I saw them actually inviting other countries. And to me, that's an interesting coincidence inside of timing of like what's happening on a world stage. But you have Iran, Saudi Arabia, Ethiopia, Egypt, and the UAE. Argentina has said no. So that's, I mean, that's Africa or, Middle East. So I think it's an interesting strategy, or to look at like what who they're inviting. And if you just read that, you're like, oh, that's interesting, like Iran, whatever. But then you actually look at the world map and you're like, oh, okay.
So again, there are some elements that need to be in harmony. So definitely keeping an eye on that is the thing to do, right? Like cooperation, working with their partners, so on and so forth. But a concerted effort to oppose the United States and the what I say quotes Western countries, right? Because not all of those countries are of the West. Of course, I'm speaking of the United States, Germany, the European Union, right? But then also large economies such as Japan is part of that. Korea is a part of, what we're talking about. So it's it is interesting, for sure. And it does point to a rise of multipolarism, which has kind of been a lot of political and diplomatic pundits have been talking, the world. The United States remains the world's only superpower. And a question remains is how long is such a case tenable? How we are a leader in the world, and currently there are events that have us focused internally in order to make ourselves better or work on ourselves, so to speak. And as any nation does that, I would imagine people are going to try and catch up, right? It's a I don't know if you've ever played the childhood game Red Light, Green Light, but as someone stands out in front and they turn around, red light, and no one moves, right? Like you get your focused on outward, but when you turn around in green light and you're focused on yourself, that's when people are trying to catch up that and gain that ground. So there's a lot of things at work here.
So it sounds like you're talking about how we're a little bit split right now as a nation and having a hard time getting on the same page in some aspects, whether that's showing up in Congress or on the streets of the US or whatever. Like there's some internal turmoil that's happening right now that's maybe taking our eye off of the world stage inside of our superpowerness. At least that's the perception.
I would say yes. The United States is less unified, I would say, at this time than we have been in quite some time. And I would assert that others are picking up on that and seeking a challenge. So,
I think you're seeing those two conflicts recently with Ukraine and Russia and the Israel and Hamas conflict.
right. And not to, I wouldn't say vigorous debate would not be welcome, right? Like simply that we could keep vigorous debate exactly where it needs to be, in the realm of civility. There's no need to turn over a desk, punch a face, put somebody in a headlock over an opinion that I understand opinions are closely held, and I understand that people have loved ones that are involved both here and abroad. I understand that loved ones, we all have loved ones probably serving either in the United States military here or abroad. I understand that some of us have loved ones involved with in conflicts here and abroad. And we all have strongly held opinions. That having been said, expressing them passionately is one thing, punching a face where there was no face punching previously, right? Is not the way to is it is not the way forward. It just isn't. Punching a face is not is is a show of force. And when it comes to the question of force, the only answer to that is who has the ability to wage when wherewithal more and greater force. And the answer to that question is not necessarily the correct solution to the issue, I would say. It does answer who can punch faster or harder or more or, with greater force, but it doesn't solve where can we, where our next meal comes from. It doesn't solve, where this line on the ground is drawn, should be drawn. It doesn't solve any of that. So, interestingly enough, to go back to BRICS, we wield these, we being nation states, are wielding or seeking to wield these instruments of power, right? Also, keep in mind intelligence slash cybersecurity, the information piece is being changed very quickly these days with the advent of cyber technology, right? I'm sitting here talking to you guys on a podcast. Maybe somebody can fabricate my voice and make it say all kinds of things I didn't say. That's part of information,
Yeah.
right? That
AI,
could
of course.
affect the diplomatic part, that could affect the economic part. There's a lot of issue there. So,
Become more
yeah.
complicated, it sounds like.
BRICS. So if you didn't know about BRICS, or that's what's going on so far. And yeah, any questions? We'd love to field that. If you'd like to hear more about BRICS in the future, we would definitely we'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So please reach out to us.
Anything else you want to share around BRICS?
Not for me. I'm sorry. I know I kind of went off on a tangent there. Is there any other points that we hadn't covered?
No, I think that for those who want to really dive in, there's a couple of, I would call them sort of a more opinion pieces in articles in the show notes. But the two Goldman Sachs pieces, your papers, I think are an interesting read. I don't know how accurate Goldman Sachs is, but I have heard their economic research sections seems to be fairly decent. And that was kind of where it stemmed from originally inside of Jim O'Neill. So if you did want more information, they do have summaries, but it is 20 to 45 pages long, depending on which paper. So it's a read. But otherwise, we'll keep you informed as brick stuff happens. And we see anything change dramatically or anyone's added newly. But personally, it was interesting and something to definitely be aware of after researching. So until next time, thank you for listening and keep discussing.
Keep discussing.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on social media, and check out our Patreon page. Leave us a review on your listening platform if you like the podcast. If you haven't heard your viewpoint or would like to be a guest, email us at info@artofdiscussing.com.
Till next time, remember there's more sides to the story than yours. Look, listen, and learn, and keep
keep
discussing.
discussing.